Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg, your host for this hour. Thank you for listening. In this next hour, we'll hear from one of the candidates for Ames City Council, Rachel Junk, and the Ames Progressive Alliance has some very interesting interviews lined up later in the hour with people who are the ones who plan and organize all these presidential political campaigns that are swirling around us. What does it take to launch a first-in-the-nation statewide presidential campaign? It's a uniquely Iowa story, so stay tuned to hear that. We always start with Dennis Hart in the news, but before we go there, just a note about the Wild Ones. Usually the Wild Ones I talk about here on Local Talk are animals that live among us here in civilization. But today, the Wild Ones I want to bring up, and the ones that really have my attention, are trees. Have you been on Northwestern recently between 13th and 6th Street? If you have, you know what I am talking about. Right? And if you haven't, take a few minutes and drive that stretch of road, or better yet, walk it, so you can really look at the trees. It's about as close to a natural art gallery as it gets, in my opinion. I'd really like to walk down the street and write down what kind of trees are actually on that street. There's definitely a lot of oaks that are very red now. And, of course, there's maples, who are largely responsible for the brilliant art show that we see. There's one by 8th Street that every year just really knocks me out. It turns bright red, but it also turns orange, and part of this tree is green at the same time. So you literally, looks like the tree is catching on fire. It's really, really beautiful. So hats off to the maple trees. Okay, here's Dennis News. Digital Dennis, it's all yours.
Thanks very much. I'm happy to be back here in the saddle on this Friday. There was plenty of news to report in Ames last week, starting last Friday, when word came that the city's Planning and Zoning Commission had approved a plan to split nearly 7 acres of land north and east of the Target store on South Duff Avenue for future commercial development. No immediate development plan has been announced for that land. There was also word that an Ames man who allegedly used hidden cameras to record his roommates illegally without their consent was arrested. The man was identified as 24-year-old Brian J. Bingston. And in another crime story, an Ames man was arrested after he allegedly broke into a woman's apartment. Authorities said 21-year-old Garrett L. Fedler was intoxicated when he allegedly made his way into the apartment of a woman he knew. Also Friday, a report that Iowa State University's School of Design had gone up in the national rankings of America's top-ranked architecture and design schools. That's a survey conducted by the Design Futures Council. ISU's landscape architecture program rose to 8th in the nation this year, up from last year's 11th place ranking. And one more note from Friday, word that Cook's Emporium on Main Street in Ames, which sells kitchenware, is celebrating 40 years of downtown business this month. Saturday's paper brought the surprising story that the Fresh Time Farmers Market store in Ames would be closing its doors for good in mid-November, less than 2 years after it opened on Southeast 5th Street. Fresh Time will keep its stores in West Des Moines and Davenport open. Also Saturday, a report that the Ames Police Department and other groups had hit the streets on Friday morning, handing out donuts to anyone willing to properly use crosswalks on Lincoln Way near the Iowa State University campus. Police officers, firefighters, and volunteers from Hy-Vee and other organizations stood on intersections on Lincoln Way from Ash Avenue to Hayward, promoting pedestrian and crosswalk safety. They had 1,000 donuts to hand out, and those donuts were all gone in less than 2 hours. Also Saturday, a story reminding voters that for the first time this coming November 5th, Iowa's city and school board elections will be merged into one ballot, instead of the elections being held separately. The goal is to drive up voter participation in local elections. And one more election note from Saturday, word that a nonpartisan mock caucus was held by students in the Iowa State University Memorial Union on Thursday night. Representatives from both the Democratic and Republican parties were on hand to educate students on how Iowa's caucuses work. Sunday brought word that one person had died in the aftermath of a police chase on Interstate 35 on Saturday morning. Authorities said the driver of a car, later identified as 41-year-old Waitar Kwoya Toman of Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, refused to stop, and the chase began. It ended near Story City when the fleeing car struck another vehicle parked in a rest area. Also Sunday, a story about the Ames Resource Recovery Plant, which began operations in 1975. That plant converts waste materials into usable energy sources. 5 years ago, the plant converted from coal to natural gas, and city officials are now looking for a long-term solution for two boiler units that have suffered from corrosion caused by the use of that natural gas. There was also word last Sunday about the new minister of Nevada's First United Methodist Church. Mike Carey was brought on board in July, and he said his first few months in Nevada have gone well. There was more on Sunday, including a story about a birthday that had taken place on October 16th. It was the birthday of Iowa State University's mascot, Cy, who turned 65 years old on the 16th. Cy first appeared at Iowa State's homecoming on October 16th, 1954, but no one knew his name because he didn't have one yet. It wasn't until later that he acquired the name everyone knows him by. Over the years, many students have played the part of Cy. And speaking of Iowa State University, the football team continued its winning ways this past Saturday, defeating Texas Tech 34-24. Politics dominated the news in Tuesday's Tribune, specifically presidential politics. Democratic presidential hopeful Elizabeth Warren showed up at Stevens Auditorium in Ames on Monday night, telling a crowd of about 1,200 people that whatever issues brought them there, she had a plan to fix them through what she called big structural change. The Massachusetts senator said she would do that in part through what she called the biggest anti-corruption bill since Watergate. She vowed to try to break up what she called Big Ag, Big Tech, and Big Pharma. Tuesday's paper also featured a story about another Democratic presidential hopeful, businessman Tom Steyer. He told the Tribune in a phone interview that he's the only Democratic candidate whose campaign is based on what he says are two of the most immediate issues in the country, a broken government and the effects of climate change. Steyer said the swamp needs to be drained in Washington and that it starts with President Trump because, in Steyer's words, he's the biggest culprit there is. Also Tuesday, a story about the visit of Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms to Ames, where she announced the opening of a campaign office for yet another Democratic presidential candidate. Bottoms was here for the opening of former Vice President Joe Biden's office. Bottoms called Biden the candidate who can and will defeat President Trump in next year's election, and she said she believes in Biden's ability to fix the 4 years of this presidency. There was also word Tuesday that students at Ames High School recently had lessons about the real world, where they learned such things as how to interview for jobs and how to balance checkbooks. It was all part of the school district's Future Ready event, which prepares students for life outside high school. Students heard from members of the community and attended a career fair that included numerous businesses. And Tuesday's paper also reported on Bob and Sharon Wilson of Colo. They've been married 44 years, and for most of that time, they've run an auction business in Colo. Wilson Auction Service has become a fixture in that community, and soon, those auctions will move from their longtime home on Colo's Main Street to a newly constructed building along U.S. Highway 30. The new Willowbrook Barn will be home for both Wilson Auction Service and for an event venue for everything from wedding receptions to corporate events to smaller gatherings. Wednesday brought word that the Boone School District was providing support to middle school students after news of a classmate's suicide went public. A 13-year-old boy committed suicide on Monday. The district superintendent said school officials were deeply saddened by the news. Information was sent home to school parents about help and support that are available to children and adults. Also Wednesday, word that counterfeit money had been showing up in Nevada. Authorities were encouraging everyone in the community to double-check their paper money to ensure its authenticity. The city clerk reported that she had found a counterfeit $100 bill outside City Hall. Law enforcement decided to share images of the bill on social media. The counterfeit bill looked at first glance to be real, but the color of the bill was faded, and there was Chinese writing on the backside. There was also word Wednesday about something set to happen today, Friday. The Trib reported that the Ames woman who was involved in a hit-and-run accident last June that left two motorists with severe injuries was set to plead guilty today. Alisa Koslan was planning to plead guilty to two counts of serious injury by motor vehicle and one count of driving while under the influence. Authorities said she was driving westbound on Highway 30 when her vehicle rear-ended a scooter that was carrying former Ames City Council member Matthew Goodman and his daughter, leaving them with serious injuries. There was more Wednesday, including stories about what happened this week at the Story County Board of Supervisors meeting. The supervisors approved a request from County Conservation to apply for a designation as a bird-friendly county. More than 300 bird species live in the county, and if the application is approved, Story County would become one of the first in the nation to earn the status of bird-friendly county. Two Iowa cities already have received that designation from the statewide habitat group, Bird Friendly Iowa. Those two cities are Des Moines and Waterloo. But that wasn't all the supervisors did this week. The board also approved a request from Story County Conservation to secure services to conduct a feasibility study for sustainable local funding. The Trust for Public Lands program tries to help communities identify local funding sources, both state and local, for parks and conservation efforts. The board also approved reimbursement requests to the State Department of Transportation for segments of paving the Heart of Iowa Trail. That trail connects communities all across Story County, Slater, Huxley, Cambridge, Maxwell, and Collins, and efforts to pave the trail have been ongoing since 2016. Yesterday's paper reported that the Ames City Council had awarded a contract to rehabilitate the restroom at Brookside Park. That restroom was damaged by fire last year. Henkel Construction of Mason City won the contract with a bid of $295,000. That bid was more than $70,000 higher than the engineer's original estimate. The new renovated restroom will eliminate designated male and female restrooms in favor of four gender-neutral facilities. The council also approved a preliminary project designed to encourage the conversion of single-family homes from rental properties into homes that residents own and live in. The goal is to possibly provide money for the rehabilitation of such properties. There are still plenty of steps before this becomes reality. Also yesterday, a report on the candidate forum held Tuesday night at the Ames Library. This one involved the seven candidates who are going after four seats for the Ames School Board. And the Trib also had a list of places around Story County where kids can trick-or-treat over the next few days. It's a long list, and it's in yesterday's paper. And there you have it, your summary of what made news this past week from the pages of the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, and no, I'm not wearing a Halloween mask. This is the way I always look. But thanks for asking. I'm taking the weekend off, but I'll be right back here on Monday with a look at what's been making news around the state. Have a great weekend.
Connect. conecta, 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 conecta con el viento.
And thank you, Dennis Hart, for the news. This is Local Talk. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for this hour. An announcement from the Ames Public Library. The Ames Public Library has an open call for African or African-American artists and performers to participate in the Black Arts and Music Festival. This is a family-friendly celebration of African and African-American art, culture, and experience that will take place in February at the Public Library. Artists are invited to submit up to 10 original works of visual art or 3 recorded original songs or pieces for consideration. Go to amespubliclibrary.org for more information and to apply. Submissions will be accepted until 11:59 p.m. on October 31st, and all artists who are selected will receive a monetary stipend. During the past few weeks, 2 candidates have come by to talk with us who are running for the Ames City Council's 4th Ward. The 4th Ward is the Northwest Ames District bordered by Ontario Street and North Dakota and North Highland Avenues, and it'll be the only area with a contested election for Ames City Council. So far here at KHOI, we have heard from the incumbent, Chris Nelson, and Joe Van Erdewijk, another contestant, and Rachel Junk is the 3rd candidate. According to the Ames Tribune, she would be the youngest woman elected to any political office in Iowa's history. She was not able to come by for a live interview today, but stopped by yesterday morning.
My name's Rachel Junk, and my pronouns are she, her, hers. I am a lifelong resident of Ames, as well as an ISU student running for Ames City Council Ward 4. So I'm studying chemical engineering, and then I have minors in political science and Spanish.
Tell us what is different about you from the other candidates. Why should people vote for you in particular?
I think it's important to think about the population of Ames, and especially the population of Ward 4, and who I would be able to represent. As that lifelong resident of Ames, I have the experience of living in Ames, but I'm also a student, and I have their perspective and ideas as well. And so bringing both of those to the table is something unique that a lot of the other candidates don't have, being able to authentically represent all parts of Ames. As well, being a young candidate, I have a lot of fresh ideas that I can bring to the table, as well as focusing on our future.
Okay, and how did you end up deciding to run for city council?
The issue that stuck out to me was representation. Students are half of the population of Ames and only have a non-voting member on the city council. So I think it's important to balance the experience that I have of being a lifelong resident of Ames, as well as my experience as a student, to be able to authentically represent all of Ames.
Do you feel that the Ames City Council should have a voting student on the city council?
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of students would agree with that. They see a lot of decisions being made that affect their daily lives, and we have no one to vote in favor of things that would support students or advocate for us on the city council.
Give us some examples of what kind of issues you've seen.
One decision in the past year was the rental cap in neighborhoods, which is now overturned. That would have been discriminatory towards students in those neighborhoods. A lot of students moved out into residential areas because they couldn't afford the apartments that were being built close to campus, and they needed to find other housing that they could afford while they're going to school here in Ames. And so I think it's important that a student perspective was taken into account, as well as a vote on that issue.
That was a very long, drawn-out discussion about rental caps. the student voice was heard through the student representative, but you're saying that you really felt that there should have been the student vote as well in that.
I do feel like some of the voices of students were heard in that discussion, but voting is important in order to really have those issues represented on the council.
Do you have an example of another issue?
A lot of students are concerned about parking. I know a lot of people in Ames in general are concerned about parking, but what can be done, especially in areas around campus, help students access places that they need to get to.
What would you want to see happen with parking?
I've heard a lot of different opinions on this while talking to people in residential neighborhoods and students and a lot of different perspectives, but I'd like to see solutions that not only help with parking density in those areas, but also work on expanding our transit and our bike and pedestrian infrastructure so that people don't have to drive a car if they don't want to. They can just walk to campus or other areas of Ames and it be accessible for them as well.
You feel that the bus and biking systems aren't as well developed as they should be for students?
So I feel like buses are doing a pretty good job for students. It's residents in Ames sometimes that get cut out and the routes aren't into areas of Ames that sometimes need to be accessed. But I think bike and pedestrian infrastructure is something we could improve on, filling in those gaps all around Ames, and that would benefit everyone in the community.
How would you go about getting enough information to be able to represent the interests of students, what students wanted and needed?
I think it's about continuing to reach out to the community. I've been door knocking for all of the local residents as well as in student apartments and areas like that. And I think it's important just expanding that constituency to include students that haven't ever been reached out before. That they have a voice in local government as well. Reaching out to them, making it easier for them to come to me, as well as utilizing social media. I think that's one way that we can reach out to students that's easy and accessible for them as well, that hasn't necessarily been utilized by local government in the past. Local government has social media and does a good job of publicizing some things, but some things could be communicated more clearer, and especially if an issue affects students, sometimes there's a gap in that communication between them. Being a student, I have students around me all day on campus. I can have that experience of being a student as well that I would bring with me to council, knowing a lot of the issues that my friends and classmates are going through. That experience would also help me on council, in addition to reaching out to new people.
You've been going door to door. I know that because you came to our house.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
What kind of feedback have you been getting? What's your takeaway?
I've been getting a lot of great feedback from people. The question I always ask is what they'd like to improve or change in Ames. And the variety of answers that I get is great. But a lot of people that agree with my three main points as well. So while it might be unconventional for a student running for the city council, they understand that I've also been a lifelong resident of Ames and have lived here my whole life and see a lot of issues from both perspectives.
Your three main points.
So I'd like to address climate change locally and take action on creating a climate action plan for the future, as well as implementing different sustainability programs like municipal waste reduction programs, recycling and composting, continuing to expand those. I would also like to make Ames more inclusive and accessible for all, and that accessibility goes beyond just a feeling. It's about making sure that people can afford to live in our great city. I would also like more young people to want to build their futures in Ames.
Three points were environmentally sustainable.
Yeah.
Accessible to all types of people.
Mm-hmm.
It's a diversity of people able to live in this town.
Mm-hmm.
And quality of life.
Young people want to live in a place that's vibrant and has a lot of different things to do. And having that high quality of life, continuing to invest in our parks and public services, amenities that people want to see, is important for young people staying in Ames after they graduate. A lot of ISU graduates will leave Ames, take a job in another city after they graduate. And Ames is a great place to live and a community to build your future in. So I would love to have a high quality of life for everyone who lives in Ames to make sure that we are keeping our talent here locally.
Now, when you talk about Ames being accessible, are you talking to some degree about housing prices?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think accessibility is definitely tied into housing. That's one reason why many people who work in Ames commute, because they can't afford to live here.
What would you want to do regarding housing if you were on the city council?
So I think there's a lot of different options. One that I'd love to look into is zoning. So making smaller lot sizes available, as well as looking into things like accessory dwelling units. Those are all things that I would love to see implemented that have been implemented in other communities to make smaller affordable housing.
What's an accessory dwelling unit?
So that's when a house is already built on a lot, and then another smaller house could be built as well on the property, mm-hmm. having two units. But I'd also like to look at the use of federal grants and CDBG funds to help with building more affordable housing as well. I think the State Street Project is a good start, but we need to continue on building more affordable housing as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What would you say to somebody who said, as a student, you won't have time to really do this?
So everyone on the council right now has a full-time job and a family, and so they're balancing that. I would just be balancing my time on the council with being a student as well.
Now, the city has been looking at the 2040 plan, long-term planning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely think planning for the future is crucial, especially with climate change. We need to be looking at what our climate will look like in 20 years, as well as how we can plan for reducing our carbon emissions. That's something that's not currently included with the 2040 plan that I'd love to see added, or a plan made in conjunction with our 2040 plan for reducing our carbon emissions for the future. With the 2040 plan in specific, just looking at which growth options are affecting our climate the least. If we have expansion sometimes, that would make it difficult for expanding sewer lines or police and fire departments or different resources to Ames. So I'd love to look at infill first. I think that having higher density housing is better for people who live there and will make it more accessible to go to a lot of different parts of Ames without expanding SIRIDE lines all the way out into a new development. And that would be really putting climate change first, is making sure that we develop within Ames's bounds before trying to grow too far.
Living in high density housing, that would be kind of a change for the way people look at housing in Ames.
I think accessibility is one thing. Especially students want to live close to campus so that they can bike and walk places and go to different businesses and restaurants and all have that within a close proximity of where they live. The more we expand out, the more people will be driving vehicles with potential carbon emissions, and it's more difficult for them to feel connected to the community than someone who can walk and bike anywhere.
The current 2040 plan does not address environmental sustainability?
They do address sustainability within our city, but don't have a specific plan for lowering our greenhouse gas emissions, carbon emissions over the years. It's important to include that aspect of our future. I see the science. I'm a scientist, and I know that our future is definitely going to be impacted in the next 20 years with more frequent climate events, as well as needing to decrease those emissions. So I think it's important for a lot of students, too, that that's included in our 2040 plan.
Are there any other issues that you feel are really important?
I think continuing to make Ames a place where more small local businesses can come and thrive is important. That's one thing that students like to see and support, is coming downtown to the Main Street Farmers Market, supporting local businesses and trying out new restaurants. And people in Ames in general would love to see more development as well. So I would love to have Ames be a place where more small local businesses can thrive, and continuing to work on different development projects that are interesting to all of Ames, continuing with the Research Park and other areas of Ames as well.
What do you see in terms of building those relationships? What's important to you?
I think it's important to have businesses that are sustainable within the community, and making sure that those are bringing new things into Ames that people want and desire to see, and making sure that they can succeed here as well.
Such as?
The Research Park, it's been bringing in a lot of engineering jobs especially, and new jobs for young people that have graduated from ISU. A lot of them can see themselves in Ames working at the Research Park after they graduate, and I think it's been a great opportunity to expand our workforce in that way and keep our young talent here.
What year are you in at the university?
I'm a junior.
You're a junior. Are you planning to stay in Ames after you graduate?
Yes. Ames has always been my home, and I hope it to be my home for the future as well. I plan on staying here.
What do you plan to do once you're out of school?
So there's a lot of different chemical engineering jobs around here in the area. I think I would start off with that. Environment and being sustainable is highly important to me, so looking for a job that can incorporate chemical engineering with climate change and the future, I think, would be something I'd be looking for.
And you'd want to do it here in the area.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit more about when you actually decided to run? What was the pivotal moment that made that seem like something that you should do?
The pivotal moment would have been, I guess, around May. I decided after finals. I had always been kind of involved in the community, and it was another student that approached me that said we should really have representation. And I never really thought that it could be me that would be the representative, but knowing what I could bring to the table with growing up in Ames, knowing how great of a community it is here, and what I knew we could improve on in Ames really kind of propelled me to take this next step in serving my community.
And was there a particular issue that caused the person to say that to you?
I believe it was climate change. I am involved with a couple different climate groups in Ames, and it's important to me. But learning that we hadn't been having that climate plan for the future was a big issue that I saw that I could change and really make that step towards the future for making sure we're prepared in 2040.
Okay, now when you were talking earlier about addressing climate change, you were talking about planning the city so that there's less driving.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have other particular ideas that you would really want to implement as city council?
I would love to continue to expand the composting program that we have now. At Iowa State, there's a pretty good recycling and composting program, but there's not community-wide. And making sure that composting is accessible for everyone, as well as recycling different materials, will help with our resource recovery plan. The trash composition that we burn has changed a lot over the years, and we're burning more plastics now than we were in the 70s when that facility was starting up. And so I think the better we can do with recycling and composting, the more emissions we'll be able to lower, as well as looking at waste reduction programs for the future as well, I think is important.
Why is composting really important for environmental sustainability?
So food waste just doesn't burn as cleanly. It's often wet in the mixture, and so it doesn't burn as efficiently in the resource recovery plant. Taking that out allows for a cleaner burn, and then that can help lower some of the maintenance costs that we've been seeing with that facility as well.
Mm-hmm. When you've been walking around to door to door, have you felt that your being a student is an asset or a handicap for you in terms of people seeing you as a viable candidate? You're kind of something new, right?
Mm-hmm. I think it's an asset because in addition to all of these students that I'm helping register to vote and learn more about our local government, I can talk to community members and understand their perspective as well and hear from them. I have a lot of connections from growing up in Ames for the past 20 years, and hearing from my community members on the doors has been great as well. And while they might not have ever considered voting for someone so young before, I think they see the asset of being able to authentically represent everyone as well.
What do you see that distinguishes you from the other candidate who is also, he's not a student, but he's quite a bit younger than most candidates have been?
Mm-hmm. So my perspective of living in Ames my entire life, growing up here, as well as being a student currently, I think it's important to be able to reach out to that constituency, as well as the people that I've lived with and grown up with my entire life in Ames. So all of my experience is kind of very relevant, and being a student now, I think, is important, being able to reach that population and actively be able to engage them is kind of a strength that I would bring.
I'll let you make the final pitch.
I would love for you all to vote on November 5th. I think it's very important to vote locally and engage with local politics and learn more about all the candidates. So thank you so much for hearing from me today.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate you
coming in. Welcome back to Local Talk. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, and we heard from Rachel Junk, running for the Ames City Council, representing the 4th Ward. Ames Progressive Alliance is here. Welcome back, Carolyn Myers and Ann Kinsel. It's good to have you back.
Today, we are going to be interviewing Matt Fidel. He is a campaign organizer, but is that your official title here, Matt?
Yeah, you can call me a field organizer.
Field organizer, okay. And he works for one of the campaigns here in Story County for president. So we'll start off by, you know, talking to Matt about some of his work experience before becoming a field organizer. And tell us more about you, Matt.
Yeah. Well, first off, thank you for having me, and thanks to KHOI. Big fan, longtime listener. So I'm originally from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Went to school up in Michigan and worked in Washington, D.C. for a couple years before moving out to Iowa last July. So I was working at a couple faith-based advocacy organizations, mostly focused on the issues of criminal justice reform and gun violence. But once the midterm election last year was rolling around, figured it was a lot easier to work on electing new folks rather than trying to convince folks to come around to our positions on gun violence and criminal justice reform. So moved out actually to Newton, Iowa, worked for the Iowa Democratic Party in Marshall County, Marion County, and Jasper County, just a few counties to the east, and worked there, and then started working for Cory Booker's campaign for president at the beginning of this year after Cory announced.
So, Matt, you said you'd been an organizer before you came to Iowa. So how does someone become an organizer? Is there a training program? Do you learn on the job? How does this work?
That's a great question. I mean, I think at the base, being an organizer is really about a mentality or an attitude, somebody who is interested in talking to people, meeting people where they're at, understanding what issues are important to folks, and putting in the work to get folks organized and really understand the power that we have to affect change.
Because everybody uses the word organized. Mm-hmm. So some of us think about, well, that's our daily planner. That's that's making sure we get the laundry done. But when you use it, what do you mean exactly when you say getting people organized?
Well, let me just make sure, if my mom's listening, I am doing my laundry as well as using a planner. But when you say organize, again, one of the things that my boss always says is that the power that we have as people is often forgotten. And when we have been able to achieve the biggest things in our country, it's often been when people have realized the collective power that we hold. So you look at things like the women's suffragette movement, you look at the civil rights movement, you look at the equality movement, those all were those important changes and movements were successful because people were able to get organized and understand the collective power that everybody held. And that's what we're trying to do in this election, and is really understand that if we can all come together, we can really do big things.
So literally, when you say organized, what does that mean when you go out and organize people?
Mm-hmm. So frankly, at the very base level, our organizing strategy starts at a one-to-one conversation. So we take folks to coffee. We understand where they're coming from, who they are, what's important to them. And that really forms the basis of a relationship. On top of that, we can build lots of different things. But so if you replicate that across the state and across the country, you're talking about thousands and thousands of personal conversations where folks are getting invested in each other and understanding that our futures are actually dependent on each other. And especially our context, we are running a campaign that says if your kids have access to affordable and accessible health care, that's better for me. And if my kids have access to clean water and clean air, that's better for you. And so if we are able to come together to see our shared purpose and our shared goals, then we can achieve a lot of big things.
How do you find or choose people that you're going to have these conversations with? Because,
mm-hmm.
You know, that's interesting.
I will say I think that the word chosen sometimes can be a little loose. I've had one-on-ones with folks that you meet in a gas station, one-on-ones with folks that have reached out to mm-hmm. our campaign, one-on-ones of folks that have been recommended by other people in touch with our campaign. I mean, that is one really special thing about our campaign is that we are really looking to meet folks where they are, no matter who they are, what they've done in the past, Republicans, Democrats, independents, no party, never been involved with politics, never caucused before, students, even high school students, middle school students who aren't going to be caucusing but are still interested in getting involved with our campaign. So really just keeping our eyes out and being open to meeting anybody wherever they are.
Tell me more about what is your motivation behind becoming a field organizer and just your community activism in general. What motivates you?
So I think we are at an inflection point in our country, and I think that anybody who has the ability to participate in our democracy should, no matter what form that takes, whether that's volunteer, whether that's professional, whether that's just a few hours on the weekend. But I think, again, going back to Anne, what you were mentioning at the beginning, the greatest changes that we've been able to make in our country is when individual, ordinary folks were able to step up and just give a little bit more towards that collective struggle. For me personally, the issue of gun violence in this country hits pretty personally. I come from the city of Pittsburgh, went to high school in the Pittsburgh public school system, and so gun violence was something that I had a lot of friends growing up who had intimate experiences with gun violence. I was on the basketball team at my high school. I had four teammates who had lost fathers to random acts of gun violence. My coach's brother was gunned down in the street over a necklace. So that was a through line growing up. And then the issue of gun violence actually revisited our community about a year ago this Sunday, when a bigot with an AK-47, an AR-15, walked into the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh in Squirrel Hill in my neighborhood and shot up 11 worshipers. And again, that one-year anniversary is coming up this Sunday. And so when we're talking about the ability to create change, there are 40,000 Americans every year who are dying by gun violence. And so I think on top of a whole host of issues, that's one where we really need to band together to finally get some change done.
Just our last show, we had Nancy Gebhardt, who is an local volunteer organizer with Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. I can see people wanting to get involved relatively easily around an issue such as gun violence, healthcare, things like that. But when it comes down to getting people involved around a candidate, has your organizing, is it different than when you issue organize? How does that work?
That's a great question. First off, love Nancy. If Nancy's listening, hi Nancy. She's a hero of mine. She's done incredible work here in Story County and in Iowa. So yes, it's different because when you're issue organizing, your first lever is advocating to the folks already in power. So an organization like Moms Demand, which is incredible, their number one lever or their goal is calling Congress and saying, you know, you should vote X way on this bill. If you're talking about a candidate, though, you're talking about somebody who by definition is actually running to replace somebody in office as we speak. And so while my candidate, I think, has the most aggressive and most ambitious gun violence prevention proposal in the field, he also has a number of plans on a whole host of different issues that come with it. So you have folks who are involved in our campaign because of his gun violence plan, but you also have folks who are involved with our campaign because of his record on criminal justice reform. You have folks who are involved with our campaign or interested in our campaign because of his views on healthcare, the environment, etc.
So when you have these one-on-one meetings with folks, and I've heard that term a lot here during this presidential campaign, do you know about their interest coming in, or is this something you're trying to learn? How does that work?
Well, I can let you in on a little secret.
Oh, good.
depends how good your intelligence is walking in. If you know that somebody is particularly interested in a certain issue, you may look to steer the conversation in that direction. But really, a one-on-one is sort of a building block for any campaign. And so that means having an open, free-flowing conversation where that person is able to take the conversation wherever they want to go. We, as a campaign, are able to better understand what people care most about and what their experiences are that have led them to care about those specific issues, that is the way that we grassroots organize.
I'm just curious as to what methods and tools you might be using with your campaign organizing. I know there's lots of different methodologies out there about community organizing, Saul Alinsky, et cetera.
Sure.
what are some of the tools that you like to use?
Yeah. Well, so that's top secret. No,
no.
So we use a bunch. 101s are a tool. Again, that is a great building block for any grassroots campaign. But we're reaching out to folks using a variety of different methods. We're talking social media, Twitter, Facebook. We've had events particularly geared towards younger audiences where Instagram and Snapchat have been really effective organizing tools. Some of our older folks who for whom that's not doesn't make as much sense. We are calling. We are texting. We are emailing. And then once we get people together, we are asking them to get their family and their friends involved and using whatever methods of communication they find most effective. I mean, again, if we're able to work in that way where we're really asking folks to get their own networks involved, that is a true way to build a grassroots campaign.
Here in Iowa, obviously, we have the caucus system, which is different than things in almost all other states. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of talk about the Iowa caucuses. Are they remain relevant? Are they useful? What are your thoughts about the Iowa caucus system?
It is something that I have never seen before. I think it's democracy at its truest form. It's incredible, and I feel very lucky to be able to witness it. At the same time, it's madness. It's crazy. And I think it's something that takes a lot of community activism and organization to sustain. I mean, I like to think, no offense to my friends back in Pittsburgh, but that the organization just is not there in a lot of other states. And the way that Iowans take the responsibility to vet candidates and organize themselves and get in touch with folks in their precinct is remarkable. And that sort of neighbor-to-neighbor outreach is, I think, a model for the rest of the country to look at in the way that we can really affect change down the road.
So madness and craziness are a little bit more words that are associated with my home state of California than Iowa, with its nice middle of the road approach to things. So I want to know what makes it madness and
– Well, so, Ian, I have to tell you, I haven't been to a caucus yet, but I have seen videos. I have seen videos. And, you know, you're talking 500, 600 people in a middle school gymnasium. That doesn't happen other places in the country. I know folks, I'll give a shout out to my good friend John Klaus in Ames here, who 6 months out from the caucus is getting his own precinct organized, taking the responsibility to step up and reach out to neighbors and figure out what this caucus is going to look like. That, I mean, I think to a lot of folks across the country, that would be a huge burden and a big load. But that is what's happening across the state, is just individual community leaders stepping up to get their own communities organized so that we can run an effective and representative caucus.
Well, maybe it's that Iowa allows people who want to be fully involved as citizens the opportunity for people like John Klaus and others to exercise that. Mm-hmm. I keep thinking, since I moved to Iowa, that people in other states who want to be that involved simply don't have the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty unique. But I'm curious about campaigns. In your experience as an organizer, do you think that campaigns approach Iowa differently than their work in other states that don't have caucuses, where it might be more reliant on television mm-hmm. or things like that?
So I've spent the last year and a half in Iowa, so I can't speak too much to what's happening in other states. But yeah, Iowa is unique, and South Carolina is unique, and New Hampshire is unique, not only in the systems of voting, but what voters care about, where voters live, you know, the urban-rural divide, the how demographics factor in. I want to also include Nevada in there. They're always getting left out of the early state conversation. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and campaigns, again, if we're talking about a grassroots campaign, it's not about campaigns walking into a state or marching into a state and saying, here's our top-down approach, take it or leave it. It's actually about walking into a community and saying, how can we be a resource to you? What things have worked mm-hmm. well in the past? Inviting folks into your campaign and, again, using those different methods of organizing to really bring people into the conversation rather than dictate what the conversation should look like.
I'm glad to hear all your experiences here. So tell me more about what your experience has been like here in Story County and in Iowa in general. I'm sure you got some great stories.
Do you have some great stories? I mean, it's been a remarkable experience. Iowa Nice is real. I can confirm that. The way that folks across the state have invited me into their homes, literally and figuratively, has been amazing. I didn't know that people that nice existed. The one story earlier this spring, when it was a little wetter than it is now, I was driving and I was starting to run out of gas. And so I put into my Google Maps, find me the nearest gas station. And so it took me off on a detour off of a county road.
Oh, no. This is not going to go well.
No, it did not go well.
Gravel? Gravel?
No gravel. There used to be gravel on there, I think, but no gravel anymore. And so I'm going up this hill, and I get to the crest of the hill, and I look down, and it's just a pit of mud. And being stubborn, and I unwisely decided to try and go through that mud. And this is the middle of a cornfield. There was about a farm a mile up the road. So I floored it, got stuck in the mud, didn't have great cell service, didn't have a lot of phone battery left. So I sprinted up to the farm praying that somebody was going to be home. They were not. So here I am thinking that I was pretty screwed. But thank God, there was a volunteer of mine from the previous year named Bev Clark from Jasper County who kind of lived nearby. And so I had enough cell service to give her a call. We couldn't really communicate that well, and she was really trying to ask me where I was. I couldn't exactly tell her, but she found me with her husband. They brought out their big truck and the hay wire, and they were able to rig up my car. And after about an hour and a half, we were able to get out of that mud pit. And we were saved.
No matter where your organizing life or beyond takes you, you'll have your quintessential Iowa Nice story.
That's exactly right.
That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know what a typical day, if there is one, in the life of a field organizer in a presidential campaign might be like from your perspective.
Sure.
I think a lot of us meet you folks, but we meet you, as you say, on one-on-ones. Mm-hmm. And then when you leave us, you leave us.
Mm-hmm.
So what's it like?
Yeah. So there certainly is no typical day. That's one of the best parts about this job is that it's very exciting. There's always new things happening. But say you get up, you got to go through your emails, see who's been reaching out, who's looking to get involved. On a good day, you probably have two to three one-on-ones. Got to say, I'm lucky enough to have had a one-on-one with both of you. And really taking the time, though, to make those quality conversations, a quality interaction, not trying to rush through those. We have a number of meetings for our team. And then you can really dive into some voter contact. We're knocking on doors. We're organizing phone banks and canvas launches. So asking volunteers to come and volunteer there. You're doing the work of reaching out to voters and seeing how they're feeling about the caucus this year. And, you know, when that gets too repetitive, sometimes the candidate's in town or there are other events in the community. We're going to central committee meetings. We're going to local organizations who hold meetings to show our support there. So we are trying to be in as many places as we can be at one time.
I have lots of friends who say to me, they're calling me all the time. They're texting me. They're eating my phone. I can't. They're everywhere. What do you say to people who say that?
So I would say, first off, don't yell at us, because we are real people on the other line. But even if you're not looking to get involved, I think we can all realize the immense stakes in this election, that there's so much at stake. And I think the campaigns are made up of a bunch of young people like myself who are trying to make this country better and make our world better. And so you can just pick up the phone and say, I'm not very interested. Or you can understand that maybe 1 hour or 2 hours a week is something that you can give, and that if we all can give 1 or 2 hours a week, we can all really come together and do a lot of really important stuff.
Mm. That's a good point. Thank you again, Matt Fidel, for being here this morning. You are from Cory Booker's campaign. We will mention that. You can keep up with all Amos Progressive Alliance activities on our Facebook page and our website. Just a reminder that there is a local election for school board and city council on November 5th. So make sure that you get out there, learn about your candidates, and vote, because that is the politicians who have the most impact on your everyday life. You've been listening to Local Talk. We have been your hosts, Carolyn Myers and Ann Kinzel, as well as Ursula Rudenberg and Dennis Hart. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 5 p.m. here at KHOY. Also remember that you can hear a recording of this show later today online at khoyfm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. Also remember that KHOY is streaming live online at khoyfm.org. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come on down and join the Local Talk team. Remember, KHOY membership drive begins November 6th. Please join us as a member donor. You can find information on how you can donate online at our website, khoyfm.org. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOY meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
Funding for KHOI is provided in part by Iowa State Center, presenting Ailey 2 at C.Y. Stevens, merging the spirit and energy of young dance talent with the passion and creative vision of emerging choreographers. November 13th at 7:30 p.m. More information can be found at center@iastate.edu.